Hey, welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Devin.
And I'm Drexel.
And today on the pod, I was just telling Drexel we have a packed show today. We're going to talk a little bit about Trump attempting to fire Robert Mueller and the reporting on that. We are going to talk about the hashtag release the memo non-controversy.
The non-memo.
It's a non-memo.
The non-memo controversy.
Yeah. And the kind of legal ramifications of that. And then we're also going to talk briefly about Davos, why Trump was in Switzerland, what was going on there. So it's like I said, a packed show. So yeah, let's just jump right in. Drexel, we're recording on a Sunday night.
It is.
Again.
It is Grammy night.
It is Grammy night.
It is. I was just watching a really powerful Kesha performance.
Ooh, Kesha.
So if you haven't watched it yet, go back and watch it. Cyndi Lauper's up there. Andrea Day. It was a really good performance and really powerful in this Me Too movement, especially after the Dr. Luke situation with Kesha.
Right. Yes. And also what I read is that Lorde was she was nominated for Album of the Year.
Yeah.
And she didn't perform because they wouldn't let her perform solo. And all of the other nominees for Album of the Year, who are all men, were offered solo performances.
Interesting. So I did not know that. Yeah, she's there with her. She was there with her brother.
Yeah, yeah.
So I thought it was. He looks just like her.
Yeah,
it's crazy. It's
yeah,
nuts.
A strong family resemblance.
Yeah. All right, Devin. What have we got for some listener feedback?
Well, we got a lot of really positive feedback on Thursday's episode in which I interviewed Liz Winstead.
Nice.
Who's the co-creator of The Daily Show and an activist for women's reproductive health. So she was really great. Everyone seemed to really like the episode. At Runner in NYC tweeted, quote, Liz Winstead should get Hellion of the Decade for the amazing work she is doing. Thanks, Hellbent, for my favorite episode yet, which warms my cold feminist heart. and then Mary, who left a comment on Instagram, because we use Instagram now, she said, oh my God, this was one of the best interviews of the show. And that is really, really, really saying something.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
That's a good three episode. Sizes. Nice job.
Thank you.
Nice work.
Thank you. It was such a fun episode. Definitely worth a listen. She's hilarious and irreverent. And we talked about abortions and Mike Pence. It was great.
Same thing.
So quick updates. As we said last week, Sarah and I are restarting our Patreon content. So sometime after Monday's episode comes out, sometime during that week, we will have additional content up on Patreon. We don't want to give you an exact day because things are hectic sometimes. And it will be sometime after Monday.
Look out for it.
And we are also still updating our Instagram stories with my and Sarah's reactions to the news in like a short informal setting. So you can follow us at Hellbent Pod to hear what we have to say every day. Also, my faces, my freeze frames are hilarious. I cannot get a freeze frame of my face from an Instagram story that is not ridiculous.
I have tried to do like, you know, clips, like if I'm on a show or something like that and I try to snapshot that, I can never get it to where I want it. I look a little nuts.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just hard.
My eyes are buggy. I don't know. And then you can find us on Patreon at patreon.com/hellbentpodcast. My skin will let everyone know if I'm stressed out. As a result, this bananas news cycle and the Trump administration in general has led to a lot of breakouts on my part. That's why I've started using Tula, a skincare company that focuses on taking care of your skin from the inside out. I love Tula because their products are powerful but gentle. I've struggled with acne my whole life, and since using their products, I haven't triggered a single breakout that isn't directly related to the Trump administration. And I'm pretty sure that's as close to magic skincare as I'm going to get. Tula is made with probiotics and other powerful skin superfoods like vitamin C, blueberry, and flaxseed. It's like a delicious and healthy smoothie for my skin. So you can go to tula.com/hellbent to try Tula probiotic skincare today. Get 20% off and free shipping on your order with the promo code at the top of the screen. That's Tula, TULA.com/hellbent, and use the promo code on screen for 20% off your Tula purchase and free shipping for Hellions. That's Tula.com/hellbent. Okay, Drexel, we've got tons to talk about, so let's just jump right in.
I don't know how we can just... I mean, this is like a dive.
It is a dive.
Off of a high dive.
It is... I was talking to Varsha.
Researcher extraordinaire.
Researcher extraordinaire. And we were laughing on the phone during our production meeting because I said something like, oh, it's been sort of a slow news week. And that I said that during a week like this is so ridiculous. Like, we didn't have... I don't even know what to do.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't really had a chance. We haven't really had to talk about Russia a lot recently.
Right.
You know, during the holidays, there wasn't a lot going on. You know, Robert Mueller kind of kept it, you know, light for us.
gave us the holidays off.
Right. And then, you know, we find out that in a White House Oval Office conversation, that President Trump had ordered the firing last June of Robert Mueller, who's the special counsel overseeing the Russia investigation, according to not one person, but four people.
The sourcing on these stories is pretty ridiculous.
Right. I mean, I think in this day and age, you do have to have more than one White House source.
Right.
Because then...
No deep throat situations.
Right, right. But ultimately back down after White House counsel Don McGahn had threatened to resign rather than carry out the directive, which is somewhat similar to some of the things, typically some of the things that we've seen in the past with James Comey and a lot of the other people that have been working in the White House when Donald Trump has asked them to do something. Robert Mueller learned about the episode. When this came out, I said to Tim, I turned to Tim, I said, you know, I just wanted you to know that Robert Mueller knows this information. Like, he knew this long before this New York Times story broke, long before any of this
probably,
came out.
He probably knew it 2 days after Trump had this conversation with McGahn.
Right. In recent months, as his investigators interviewed current and former senior White House officials, just to kind of reiterate probably some things that he had already known.
Right.
The president began to argue. So Donald Trump had been trying to figure out a way to fire him that did not look like the way that he fired James Comey. He needed to find a conflict of interest that he thought would stick. But Donald Trump's not smart enough to come up with conflicts of interest that make any sort of legal sense.
Right.
So
it also, here's the other thing about firing him over a conflict of interest. It doesn't actually solve Trump's problem.
Right.
Because just by getting rid of Robert Mueller, all that means is that they're going to bring in another special prosecutor or special counsel. There's no way that this is going to drop because Mueller leaves.
I think in Trump's head, nobody, and when Robert Mueller was appointed as special counsel, he had the backing of every Republican.
It's true.
Every Republican who was against Donald Trump, Newt Gingrich, all these people who've come around to being like his best buddy. And he knows that there will never be somebody as good as Robert Mueller.
It's true.
Once, if Robert Mueller had to recuse himself or if he got fired or whatever. So I think that's what he was banking on. So he said that he had three conflicts of interest that...
These are too good. They're
that
too
disqualified
good.
Him from overseeing the investigation. First, he claimed that a dispute years ago over fees... because Robert Mueller was a member of the Trump National Golf Club in Sterling, Virginia. A dispute over fees had prompted Mr. Mueller, the FBI director at the time, to resign his membership.
Okay, look. Even if Mueller even remembers that situation, that one is the funniest one to me.
Yeah, that one's like if you go to Ralph's, or the grocery store, sorry for those who do not have a Ralph's in there, and you have a dispute over your Ralph's card.
Right.
And
right. And it's just, it's funny. It's really sad, though, because it really shows the level of petty.
Right.
That Trump is playing
on. He's like, you remember that time?
Right.
Do you remember when I couldn't get the fees?
And you didn't like them, and you left.
Right. And you resigned, and he probably had something against me then.
Right.
That's what Donald Trump has going on in his head.
Right. Which is
a whole lot of nothing.
Mm-mm.
The second thing, he also said that Mr. Mueller could not be impartial because he had most recently worked for the law firm that previously represented the president's son-in-law, Jared Kushner.
Okay, here's what I don't understand about that one. How is that a conflict of interest? Because I thought Trump and Kushner were on the same side. So if Mueller was representing Jared Kushner, wouldn't the logical extension of that be that he was had a conflict of interest weighted towards Kushner and therefore Trump?
I think that what it looked like to me was that Donald Trump does not understand attorney-client privilege.
Right. Okay. You know what
I mean?
Like, fair.
I mean, that's basically what it was. You know, he thinks that Robert Mueller knows too much about Jared Kushner, so he thus cannot be impartial.
Got it. Okay.
Finally, the president said that Mr. Mueller had been interviewed to return as the FBI director, as if going in for a job interview disqualifies you from being, if you thought he was going to be a decent candidate enough to bring him in.
Right.
Why wouldn't he be a decent enough special prosecutor?
Right. That's also just, general. Maybe that would be a conflict of interest if he was a special counsel investigating the current FBI director.
Right.
And he was like, ha ha ha, I want that job.
Get that job. Right.
But that's not even close to what's going on.
But again, it goes back to what you said. In the petty realm, it is, he thinks that that people are so against him that they can't possibly be impartial because they want to get back at him for something.
Right. You're with them or you're against him.
Right.
There's no neutral actors.
Right.
Well, and so Don McGahn is really cast as the hero in this story.
Which is even crazier.
Which is weird.
Yeah.
Like, Don McGahn is, he was kind of nobody on the political playing field until, you know, everything with Mueller started to happen. And then all of a sudden everyone's super interested in who White House counsel is because of Sally goddamn Yates. But what is interesting about that is that everyone's saying, oh, McGahn, he stood up to the president. He's so impartial and he's saving democracy. But I think this was all in self-interest.
It's always all in self-interest because I think that we know that at the end of the day that Don McGahn has to have a job after the White House anyway.
Right.
And he has to be, his reputation and credibility
relies
on the line if somebody thought that he was, obstructing justice.
And I also think it might be a signal to Mueller. Like
save me?
Yeah. Like, I'm on your side here. Right. Like, I'm trying to stop this train from leaving the station.
Do you think that Don McGahn leaked that?
Yes, I do. I think his office leaked
somebody,
it.
I was reading something that somebody said that they believe, and maybe this is something I was watching on the CNN or watching on the news or something like that, where somebody said that they believe that a lot of the leaks are coming out of people who were on the grand jury and not from Mueller's office. And because the grand jury members, for those that don't know, aren't bound by like confidentiality.
Right.
And so they can kind of say whatever they want to say, but typically grand juries happen very quickly. And so this one's obviously taking a little bit longer. wish it was happening a little quicker. But so a lot of these leaks people believe are coming out of the grand jury members.
That's definitely possible. I believe grand jury proceedings are supposed to be secret, though.
They are, but from what I understand, and I could be wrong, somebody can correct me, I don't think those grand jury members are bound by confidentiality.
I see. So there's no legal ramifications to them leaking.
Saying something.
That is actually a really good theory. It definitely could come from the grand jury, but I have a feeling at least this story came from Don McGahn's office.
Yeah, because what we have seen is this White House has no problem leaking things about the president. Not only that, but the White House has not denied anything.
Right.
Which is different than some of the stuff that we've seen in the past.
It's also really concerning to me that we know that Trump lies. This is an instance, though, where he said point blank to the press after the month of June that he had never tried and never intended to fire Robert Mueller.
Right.
And he said that so clearly and just so bluntly. And then we find out that's
not the case.
It's not even close to the case. That it wasn't even a lie by omission. It wasn't a lie by, you know, a secondhand lie. It was just him lying directly to the American people.
Which begs the question, does he not remember it or is he just lying?
Right.
And in both cases,
we have a problem.
That's a problem, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I wish it was he just didn't remember.
Yeah.
But I know that it's because he's lying.
Right. Also, I've been reading a lot about how a lot of his lawyers and other administration officials are kind of giving Trump misleading information or bad information so that he doesn't make ridiculous choices. You know, Ty Cobb has to tell him that, oh, the Russia investigation is almost over, you know, or that you need cause to fire Comey, which technically he doesn't.
Right. I think that that's a lot to keep him calm. And obviously to keep, obviously we know that is to keep him calm and it's to keep him from doing something overly stupid.
Right.
So, I mean, it's a shitty situation to be in if you are, if you've spent your life trying to be a somewhat decent lawyer. But you know, that's one of the things that people just don't like about lawyers is like, why can't you just be on the right side?
Right.
You know, and yes, there are people out there who have done heinous things who deserve the opportunity to go through, the justice system, have the justice system do that. But, and lawyers who kind of take that mantle, pick up that mantle and do that. But in this case, you've got millions of people who are hoping that you are doing the right thing and that, you know, your, you know, job is to protect the Constitution first.
Well, and I think that that's the difference between Don McGahn and Ty Cobb, because Ty Cobb represents Donald Trump personally and directly, and everyone is entitled to zealous legal representation. And that's why we have attorney-client privilege. That's why they're, you know, you are appointed a lawyer if you can't afford one. But the difference is that McGahn is responsible to the office of the president and to the Constitution,
right,
not Trump himself.
Right.
And that's the difference. So it wouldn't be breaking confidentiality for Don McGahn to tell people this information because his client is not Trump.
Right.
So I think that has a lot to do with it, too, is we can't really expect Ty Cobb to, quote, do the right thing because he's legally and ethically bound not to dismay or betray the trust of his client. Don McGahn's client is the Office of the President and the Constitution of the United States.
Do you think that just based on what you were saying there, that that has a that puts Jeff Sessions in a better light?
That he is serving the country,
right,
not the president.
Right.
I think that's why he ultimately recused himself from the Russia investigation.
Right.
I don't think that was any sort of like personal come to Jesus, for lack of a better term, moment. Right. I think it was he realized that his job was to the country, not right, to this person.
Right.
And there was at least a little bit of part of him that couldn't
Jeffrey Beauregard
put Trump first in this situation.
Right.
Even if he thinks the investigation is crap, even if he thinks that Trump should be able to get away with all of this, there was some part of him that said, I at least right this second work for the United States.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that Donald Trump is going to be, at this point in the investigation, going to be able to fire Robert Mueller?
No, there's no way.
There's no way.
It'll end his presidency. If he even attempts, a Saturday Massacre type situation where he goes down the line of firing people until he finds someone who will fire Mueller for him,
right,
it would end his presidency. And this actually segues nicely. There is a quote from Norm Eisen about why trying to fire Mueller matters. He said, quote, there was already substantial evidence of obstruction, and the evidence that Trump wanted to remove Mueller and yet again interfere with the investigation provides more of it. It is also noteworthy that the reasons offered were implausible, such as the fact that Mueller broke away from one of Trump's golf clubs once years ago. That is not a disabling conflict. All of this goes to the key element of obstruction, corrupt intent. Despite the mounting evidence, Mueller himself won't make up his mind until he interviews Trump. And if the special counsel, who has had much more evidence than what is public, has likely not yet made up his mind, we outside the investigation certainly cannot yet do so. But I think what Norm Eisen was trying to say here was that even if Mueller hasn't made up his mind because he hasn't talked to Trump yet, if Trump fires Mueller, that's a pretty good indication of where his intent lies.
Right.
And that's why his presidency would be over. is because he basically plays his hand before he even gets a chance to talk to Mueller.
Which from a political standpoint would be detrimental
for
Republicans.
In
November, because
there's no way
the American people would not trust that they could handle an impeachment. We would think, hopefully this is the way that we would hope that Republicans would do the right thing. We know that Paul Ryan doesn't have a spine and Turtle Shell might Ursula might roll up that scroll and
get on out of town.
Right. That from a party standpoint, Republicans would not have a choice.
Right. Which is why I think there are also Republicans in the administration, Don McGahn included, who are throwing themselves in front of Trump to stop him from doing that.
Right. But on the other side of, so between what we know about the firing of Mueller, at least this information that has come out, Donald Trump, before, and we're going to talk about the Davos trip here in a little bit, Donald Trump talks to the press corps right outside of, I don't know why John Kelly did not put a bolt lock on his, to think that Donald Trump wouldn't go talk to the press. You know what I mean? Like, why would any access to the press should not happen?
Right.
That's easy for the president.
Needs adult supervision.
So you need child locks on doors. and so he, you know, says this thing like, I'm happy to talk to Robert Mueller.
Right.
And then
his lawyers have small heart attacks.
Right. And everybody. John Kelly's like closing the door behind. Just close the door. Just close the door. And so like he is confident that, you know, even Fox News to the point was like, nah. You probably shouldn't be doing that. they knew the things they were like, well, he could trip him up and it's not a very good, like,
no,
you know that he's lying. Why don't you just come out and say it? Shep Smith would say it.
He would.
Megyn Kelly, maybe not so much, but like, not that she's on Fox News anymore, but like Shepard Smith would definitely call him out on Fox News and Fox and Friends, you know, and Judge Napolitano and all those people were like, don't do it. Don't do it, Trumpy.
That has to tell you something.
Right, exactly. So, you know, once that interview happens, there's no way that he could fire him after that.
Oh, no.
So if this happens within the next couple, it can't happen within the next couple of weeks because I don't know that Robert Mueller, I think that he's still a Republican. And I think that's something that people have to remember. And the president's agenda is the president's agenda. And that does not mean, just because he's investigating the president, does not mean that he probably does not agree with a lot of the things that the president, that this administration is doing. So that's something that people have to remember is that Robert Mueller, like a lot of these other people, do not think like, you know,
liberals do. Well, but that, I think that also speaks to Robert Mueller's character overall. He might hold these ideals.
Right.
But he's more interested in finding out what happened.
Right. And so what I'm saying is he won't do this interview within the next couple of weeks
because
the State of the Union's coming up this week. Tomorrow, if you're listening Monday, it's tomorrow night. And so he won't want to derail any positive things that might have come out of the State of the Union.
That's
which
true.
Apparently it's going to be a very bridge building speech.
Eat me. Anyone who says that is formally invited to kiss my ass.
Yeah.
Like, there's
Right. And I think that's going to be the, so brace yourselves, people, because that's what you're going to hear is this idea that Donald Trump had this. I mean, we've seen him in his joint speech last year. It was fine.
The bar is so low. He didn't vomit all over himself. And people were like, you are so presidential.
Right. And I think that that's going to be something that we hear. He's going to try to definitely reach to the Democrats. He's going to try to talk about things that Democrats have been wanting, infrastructure and all this stuff. And people are going to be like, oh my gosh, we've got Joe Kennedy coming out with the Democrats response right after. Maxine Waters doing a speech.
That's going to be a speech I will watch.
Poor Joe Kennedy.
I know. No one cares.
I mean, at this point, like, everybody's like, Joe Kennedy, great.
Cool.
Maxine Waters. Yep. So that's going to be really interesting to see. So I don't know that they're going to want to take away from.
But here's the thing. I think as soon as it came out that Mueller wanted to talk to Trump directly, there was no way for Trump to fire Mueller.
Yeah.
There's no way. Because even if he hasn't actually talked to him yet, it would look like, and like I would, because it would be this, is that he would try to fire Mueller before that interview so that Trump doesn't incriminate himself.
Right.
Or other people, or the Russians. I have no idea.
Yeah. And so you were talking about people jumping in front of Donald Trump to stop him from happening. The people around Trump aren't the only people aren't the only people that have been attempting to stop or impede this investigation.
Well, that's true.
We've seen it happen constantly in Congress. We've seen Devin Nunes do it over everything. He's been, Devin Nunes, if you remember last year, went to the White House. I think he like told Donald Trump a lot of the stuff that was coming, that was from the Intelligence Committee that was being talked about. And then had that presser on the White House lawn.
Okay, I can't. What I'm remembering about the story, that is all correct. But also, there was like he snuck out of the back of the building and like gotten an Uber, and it was the like worst bullshit spy novel
you've ever read.
It was very John Grisham.
And I love John Grisham.
Me too. That's why I could identify it right away. Right.
That's so funny.
Yeah. So actually, speaking of that memo, we are going to talk about that right after this. I don't know if you know this, but I'm a mom. And I have reached peak mom, which includes that gross lick your finger and wipe your kid's face thing, telling my adult friends to bring sweaters out to dinner, and I also carry snacks around in my purse. RX Bar Kids is a clean label snack bar with no BS. No bad stuff for the under 18 crowd, but my hellions know that BS means no bullshit. It comes in 3 flavors: chocolate chip, apple cinnamon raisin, and berry blast. My son likes the apple cinnamon raisin, but I, of course, like the chocolate chip. They are tasty and great to bring with you on the go. And apparently they're not just for kids. My adult friends, who are all warm in the sweaters that I told them to bring, will often ask if I have any RX bars on me, because sometimes they just need a snack. So you can find them at Target stores, or for 25% off your first order, visit rxbar.com/hellbent and enter promo code hellbent at checkout. That's 25% off your first order at rxbar.com/hellbent and use promo code hellbent. Keep them on your person at your own peril, because at least in my friend group, they don't last long. Okay, Drexel, so let's talk about this memo. Hashtag release the memo.
Hashtag the non-memo.
The non-memo. You were just talking about Devin Nunes and his John Grisham-like antics.
Yeah.
Can you tell us what this memo is?
So if you haven't been paying attention, the Republicans all week Fox News have been talking about releasing this memo that Republicans on the Intelligence Committee had written up based on information they had about the FBI, basically.
Right. And it's Fox News and Russian bots on Twitter.
And Russian bots on Twitter, because I guess release the memo was like one of the largest, like, Russian bots had been the most users of that hashtag.
Right, right.
So Nunes wrote, it was written by staff members for Devin Nunes and suggests that the FBI may have relied on politically motivated or questionable sources to justify its request for a FISA warrant, a secret surveillance warrant in the investigation's early phase. Democrats have not seen this memo.
Right.
Nobody has seen this memo out. So technically, memos like that have to be seen by the ranking member.
Right. And their chief of staff.
And the chief of staff and the chairman.
And their chief of staff. And those are the only 4 people that see these type of menus.
But the people that have seen this memo are Republicans on the committee.
Right.
And not Democrats. Democrats, Adam Schiff and those on the Intelligence Committee have characterized the memo as misleading talking points designed to smear the FBI. They said it inaccurately summarizes investigative materials that are also classified. For Republicans not to be to be bashing the FBI, I mean, Hannity goes on and on every night about it, and it's like really crazy, is a little nuts. And for Jeff Sessions not to publicly put out information or back his FBI is sad to watch, because you've got other AGs that are doing that
right
in the past, not just Eric Holder. Loretta Lynch, all these other people in the past have come to the mat for the FBI.
Well, usually they come up through state attorney positions, right, and positions within intelligence and law enforcement. Loretta Lynch came from New York.
Right.
Eric Holder was also a prosecutor. So I think they also just, they view it differently.
Right. And I think it's a lot of Democrats, especially a lot of Democratic AGs, walking a fine line, because Democrats don't want to be seen right now as backing the FBI too much, because right, because Donald Trump will spin that as, see, right, the FBI is working for the Democrats. So it's hard to be in the position of the FBI, because they have nobody backing them right now other than former AGs and former officials that have worked with the FBI. And they're in the spin zone, with Fox News. But on the other side of that, you've got this, on this memo piece of it, the assistant attorney general had to release a letter to Devin Nunes and the Republicans to tell the Trump appointed assistant attorney general had to tell them, do not release this memo.
Yeah.
It is not good.
This is not good. Not good. I also know that this might have something to do with why Paul Ryan was visited not too long ago.
By Christopher Wray.
Yes. Because they needed to basically get Paul Ryan, who is the leader of the Republicans in the House, to get Paul Ryan to tell Devin Nunes to back the fuck off.
Right.
Which Paul Ryan, because he has no spine, was like, no, I'm not doing that. It is dangerous to release this memo.
Democrats also have their own. They drew up their own memo. And so these competing memos is really stupid.
It's so weird.
And it's almost like, okay, just maybe not release the memo, but at least give it to the Democrats on your committee.
Right. And come to some sort of solution from there. Because right, this is going to escalate very quickly into, well, I'm going to release this and I'm going to release this. And
first of all, I don't think that Devin Nunes is going to release this memo.
No, I think he's trying to create, whip up hysteria around it.
Yes. And so he knows that. But what this Trump White House has to, is either they're going to quickly realize or they haven't realized yet, is that there's way too much stuff going on for them to get, they create so much hysteria around so much stuff that they can't quite keep it all together.
Right.
And it's not helping them in the long run.
Right.
So they're going to have to try to figure out how to rein some of that in and rein some of their people in.
Right.
But if you're here in California and you're in Devin Nunes's congressional district, or if you are looking to donate to the Democratic challenger in that area,
please do that.
Because Devin Nunes, could you imagine Devin Nunes not only would he lose his seat,
yeah,
but we'd flip the House.
Oh, 100%.
We wouldn't have to worry about releasing no memo.
And it's a threat to national security to do so.
Right.
And I think let's welcome in one of our favorite figures here on this podcast.
Who that?
Sally Q Yates. She was talking about this, and she said that this is, quote, beyond unusual and really dangerous. Like, way to go right to the point.
I could see her saying that in her southern drawl. Like, I love
really
it.
Really dangerous. She added, it seems like there are almost weekly efforts to try to get DOJ to open up a case on his formal political rival. That would be Hillary Clinton. The near daily attacks on the FBI, like through this memo, we've never seen anything anywhere close to this before.
Yeah, I mean, he brought up Hillary Clinton. He hasn't brought up Hillary Clinton in a long time, but he did during that random, opening the door on the other day. Hillary Clinton didn't, testify under oath. I don't know. She did for 11 hours.
Right.
I don't know if you missed that part.
I listened to that whole audio recording, and Trump was obviously so condescending. But he was like, I don't know. Did she?
Right.
I will.
Right.
She did. Like, I will.
He's a child.
And that's actually really that's degrading to children.
Yeah.
Yeah. My child is not that bad.
I was like, there's more.
No, there are no. There's just one. And the other thing that I found really interesting is that Newt Gingrich, unofficial Trump advisor.
He wants a cabinet position.
So badly.
Yeah.
He said, quote, "Of course the president ought to be able to expect loyalty." So this is in response to
James Comey. Everybody
asking for loyalty. Andrew McCabe, who, for those of you who don't know, he asked Andrew McCabe who he voted for in this last election, right, which is just completely inappropriate.
Right.
And then wanting Sessions to be loyal to him, being angry that Sessions recused himself from the Mueller investigation, all of these things. So Newt Gingrich said, "Of course the president ought to be able to expect loyalty. He is the chosen president of the United States by the American people, and he is the chief executive. If they're not loyal to him, who the hell are they supposed to be loyal to? The fucking Constitution?"
Yeah, I mean, on some level, we understand that piece of it. If you are a cabinet official, then yes, your semi-loyalty is to your boss.
You serve at the pleasure of the president.
Yes, that famous line, if you're a West Wing fan, right, Leo McGarry says all the time, you serve at the pleasure of the president. In this case, if you work for the DOJ, that is not the case.
Right. It's not. The DOJ is completely separate. Thank you, Richard Nixon.
Right. Because we learned with the White House counsel, if the White House counsel is not somebody who has to be loyal to the president, what makes the president think that the Department of Justice is, right, supposed to be loyal to them? Because the White House counsel is also supposed to protect the White House.
Right.
In this case, the office of the president.
Right.
In this case, the president. Everybody else outside of that, not so much. The DOJ is supposed to protect America. It is the Department of Justice of the United, right, States of America.
Right, of the Constitution. Right.
Not the Department of Justice of Donald Trump.
Right. Bill. And so I think the whole point of Release the Memo was to whip up frenzy around, is the FBI corrupt? That's the thesis statement, that the FBI is somehow bad or working with Democrats, and therefore the Mueller investigation is moot. This whole story is very strange. And I honestly didn't understand it in the beginning. Like, what, release what memo? What are you talking about?
But it was a Twitter.
It only snowballed
on Twitter. Right. It wasn't even a news story.
Which again, I point to Russian bots on Twitter.
Right.
So we're back to the same place of Russia interfering in everyday American politics.
Right.
We've looped all the way back around.
It's full circle.
Let's talk about Trump in Davos for the World Economic Summit in Switzerland.
When you texted me about Davos, I thought you were texting me about Betsy DeVos.
Okay, I made that mistake too.
No. And I was like, "What? Why would we be talking about Betsy DeVos?
Like, what's that bitch done lately?"
She has gone so far in her hole that we have not seen her in months since she got cornered at public schools. I really didn't know what DeVos was because no president has gone to DeVos in like two decades or something like that.
Yes.
So I was like, what is this thing that he's going to?
I know.
So what is Davos?
Okay. Davos.
Davos. Sorry. Jesus.
It is a World Economic Summit. So basically world leaders and industry titans and CEOs all get together to, I don't know, pat each other on the back and masturbate to one another's success. I'm not really sure.
I'd be right there with Justin Trudeau, though.
Yeah, I mean, like, okay. What's really important about this story is not so much whether or not Trump went, although Trump brought pretty much every single person in his cabinet and White House staff.
Not even every single person. Scott Baio was supposed to be there. He couldn't go. Because he's in a Twitter tantrum about somebody who, I can't remember what her name is, but accused him of sexual assault during Charles in Charge.
I somehow believe that.
Yeah. So he's like responding to that, like doing Facebook Live events and shit. And you know who was there, who yeah, gave an interview on, it was either Cuomo or it was Don Lemon right after, was Anthony Scaramucci.
That's right.
Who gave an interview at 3 a.m., who was like, no. You don't understand what I'm saying. And it was the craziest interview. Like, I almost felt bad because I was like, okay, it's really cold there. Maybe his brain cells aren't working the way that they're supposed to. And it's like, and it's really early or really late for him. So maybe he hasn't had much sleep. But like, he was like, no. I believe the report, the Washington Post report, one of the reports that had come out last week about the firing of Mueller. He was like, he didn't, but he didn't fire him. And then Chris Cuomo was like, but you believe the report that he said he was going
so
to.
You have missed the point entirely.
No. And then like, he just kept going on and on and on. And Chris Cuomo was like, but if you don't believe the report, if you believe the report, then you believe this exactly what he's saying. So like, why was Anthony Scaramucci? He's not even a White House spokesperson.
He's not even anything right now.
Why did he have to be there?
What is he doing? I don't know.
Who is he working for? He's working for the Mercers.
Right. Why is Scaramucci in Switzerland?
Right.
Here's the thing about this, though. The media is saying that Trump is just behaving so well.
Right, because
Davos.
Because he gave a teleprompter speech.
And
that's why I'm saying brace. I'm telling
right,
you.
For State of the Union.
Tuesday's State of the Union, the shit that we heard last week at Davos, brace yourselves for that. Donald Trump is the most, this is the most presidential Donald Trump has ever been.
Yeah.
That's what you're going to hear. Just, I know it's going to infuriate the shit out of everybody. I'm just telling you now.
Right.
You heard it right here.
Right. Like, keep your blood pressure down.
Low.
Yeah.
Drink a little.
Because it's going to get real.
It's going to get rough.
Yeah. So the New Republic actually said, quote, in reality, Trump's trip to Davos has been one of the singular triumphs of his presidency. So we're at the such low bar now that Trump going to an economic world summit that no president has been to in 2 decades is the singular triumph of his first year in office.
I mean, Jay-Z had done an interview this week with Van Jones this weekend, really great interview. And he talked about black unemployment Van Jones brought up black unemployment. And then Donald Trump said something about, you know, how he always touts that black unemployment's down, stuff like that. What Donald Trump doesn't realize, I don't know how Democrats have not, this is another messaging problem with Democrats, how Democrats have not corrected him
right
in public.
Right.
And been like, actually, your policy, you have no policies.
Right.
There is not a single policy or legislative achievement, economic legislative achievement, other than this upcoming tax bill that won't kick in for another year.
Right.
That you can claim that your policy deregulation does not help lower income families.
Right.
That's not how it works.
Right.
So how Democrats haven't gotten out there and said on national television, no, these are the policies that we came up with. These are the policies that we put in place with Barack Obama. You had nothing to do with that. And yet he gets to go to this economic summit and tout these economic achievements that did not happen under his short-term president, you know, his president,
right,
that has only been there for just less than a year and a half.
Hey, Hellions, it's me, Sarah, and I'm back with another segment of Sarah's Shouty Soapbox. Full disclosure, I recorded this whole thing and called it Sarah's Shouty Corner, and I was like, I can't even stay on brand with my own shit. Like, I gotta re-record this. So anyway, this is take two. Again, we believe in transparency here at Hellbent headquarters. So I wanted to take this time today to give a little update on my health, because I haven't really done that since the initial Sarah's Shouty Soapbox, formerly known as Sarah's Shouty Corner. But before I do that, I want to do a little Patreon plug again. Devin and I are trying to get back to a regular schedule of bonus content. So there will be a special Sarah's Shouty Soapbox with Devin giving commentary after on Patreon. So if you are a $5 patron and up, you get access to that kind of bonus content. And again, like I said, we're trying to get back onto a regular schedule of bonus content because we really want to make that space a worthwhile one for the people who are investing in us. And we haven't really been able to do so because of my health. And we really, really appreciate those of y'all who have stuck with us and understand. But again, like I said, we want to get back to that. So I will be doing that segment on Patreon about Steve Wynn. So there has been a report in the Wall Street Journal about an alleged pattern of sexual assault and just general sexual misconduct involving his employees at Wynn Resort. It's a massive story. He also just recently stepped down as RNC finance chairman. So there's a lot going on there we definitely want to address. And then on the Democratic side, there was a story that came out in the New York Times about a campaign employee in 2008, the 2008 campaign of Hillary Clinton's, who was a victim of repeated sexual harassment at the hands of one of her senior advisors. And that made it to top levels of the campaign. Hillary Clinton's campaign manager actually recommended that he be fired. And Hillary Clinton did not fire him. There were some intermediate punitive measures that she took. So we're going to talk about that story. There's also been some really great follow-up reporting from BuzzFeed News about that with more details. Again, we want to talk about both stories because there's one on the Republican side, there's one on the Democratic side. We're not equating the two, but I think in the grand scale of the Me Too conversation, I think both stories are important to address and discuss. So again, that's going to be on Patreon. So that's my Patreon plug. I'm done with that. On to the health front. I know when I first did my Sarah Shoddy soapbox, I was talking about how, you know, I was starting to see a neurological chiropractor, and I was really amazed at how much I had been improving in just, you know, one session, especially compared to how I was in December, which was like the worst of the worst. Like, that was definitely my pit health-wise, at least so far, knock on wood. And yeah, I've continued to see steady improvement since I started seeing this neurological chiropractor in early January, and it's been really encouraging. I mean, I'm definitely not where I want to be. Like, I'm super eager to just feel, I don't even know what the word is, not constrained in any way. You know, I'm still not able to really read or concentrate for very long. I definitely have to take a lot of phone breaks. But thinking about things that I'm able to do now compared to like a month ago, it's pretty staggering. Like, I can listen to podcasts now. I can watch TV on my phone. I definitely could not do that last month. I certainly haven't been able to really watch any TV for the past 6 months. So it's like, wow, like there's something to this neurological chiropractic work, at least with me. I'm also starting to see an acupuncturist. So I'm just really, you know, making sure that I'm exploring as many healing paths as I can, because I really am so eager to get back on the podcast and back in the saddle with Devin. That being said, I don't really want to give a timeline because I don't want to pressure myself to get back at a certain date. I really want to listen to my body because I haven't been the greatest at doing that. And like I said, I feel super eager to get back, but that doesn't necessarily mean that my body is ready to get back. But I think that hopefully soon, Devin and I are going to start trying to do proper bonus podcasts with the two of us talking, as in like a normal podcast would, versus sort of this format, which is me going on a diatribe and then, you know, Devin and Drexel responding to that. But we're going to try to do these like mini bonus podcasts, at least to start, because we can really, you know, it's a good test, like a 15 minute or 20 minute test, and then hopefully work my way up from there so I can get back on the main podcast. Again, I don't want to give a timeline because I don't want to pressure myself or my body, but I'm hoping it's very soon because I'm feeling much better than I did a month ago. So yeah, that is the update on me. I also just want to really give a huge shout out to Devin because she's been holding down the motherfucking fort, not even just this past month, but the past 6 months with all my health woes, and she's been nothing but supportive and amazing, and she's never made me feel bad or guilty or pressured about you know, my timeline, and that is really huge and it's much appreciated. And I don't even think I can put into words what that's meant to me, but I miss her so fucking much. I miss doing this podcast, but I'm so, so glad we have Drexel to guest host for the time being, because I think he's been doing an amazing job. And it's really, really fun to hear the conversations between him and Devin. If and when I come back, we definitely have to figure out a way, you know, to get him back with us on some form of a regular basis, because I think he really adds. So anyway, that's it for me for now. Again, if you want bonus content, please head over to Patreon. That's patreon.com/hellbentpodcast. It really, really means a lot if you were to contribute and become a patron. It definitely helps us keep the lights on.
Okay, Drexel, heavy, long show.
Long show, but great. It was good.
This is one of my favorite conversations I think we've had.
I know.
It was really great.
It was good.
So let's kind of take it up a little bit. What are you grateful for today?
You know, one of the things that I thought was really interesting to watch was the Allie Raisman, the Nassar case last week. And I think that one of the things, you know, as on the heels of talking about RBG, that we are in a place where we have the judges like Judge Aquiline who can look at a case and humanize it in a way that not only that we can rally around, because obviously we rallied around the girls, the 140 girls that were molested and that were part of this case, but that we also heeded the words of this judge, and made that a rallying cry, a part of this entire Time's Up Me Too movement. Like, it could not have come at a more appropriate time,
right,
for her words to be what they were. And so
she didn't shy away from it.
She didn't. And I know that it turned off a lot of people that said, oh, judges shouldn't really be using their, but they should.
Right.
Because what we've seen over the past few months, especially with this Trump administration, that it is our judicial system that has protected us.
Right.
In the way that it should. Our justice system should be on the side of the American people at all times. And Judge Aquiline certainly did that. You know, one of the things that I really liked about what she said was, if I do media requests, she said, I won't take any media requests until after the appeals. But if I do media requests and you ask me, there has to be a victim with me.
Because right.
I don't want this to be about me.
Right.
I want this to be about the victim and then getting their story out, because their story is more important than mine. She said, I have four jobs. I don't need this kind of like publicity.
Right.
I got to move on. I was like, what kind of jobs you got, girl?
Yeah, right. But
she's Ubering.
Oh, God.
You know what I mean? But but I think that is something that we can look forward to. It is why we need more women on the court, on the bench. It, you know, no matter what their ideology is, we definitely need more women in the court. I'm looking forward to seeing more women elected officials speak out like Judge Aquiline. So I think that, you know, once you get the ball rolling,
right, gender parity,
you're gonna start seeing a little bit more straightforwardness. We went through a time where women speaking out, especially Hillary Clinton, got a lot of flack for speaking out as strongly as she did,
right.
And in this case, Judge Aquiline did get a little flack for doing that, but not as much as she would have if this was last year or the year before, you know, these past few years. So,
right.
So it was good to see that piece of it, and certainly really grateful, for that, to watch that opportunity for more women to get out there and talk in a way that we should have been, I don't want to say allowing, but like that women should have been allowed to speak out in the way that they should have been over these past few years. And that, right. And so, her doing it from the bench certainly, I think, opened a lot more doors for judges, for female judges and women judges to do that, and hopefully a lot of more female candidates.
Yeah, she's super fucking badass.
Yeah.
She was Hellion of the Week last week. On Thursday's show, I do Hellion of the Week, a little section. Yeah.
What about you?
So I am also grateful for an independent judiciary, as Sarah usually is, so I feel like I need to step up in her absence. But basically, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court heard a case about Pennsylvania's congressional districts, and they ruled that they were basically gerrymandered to hell, motherfucker, and they need to be redrawn immediately because it's unconstitutional, which is a huge win for gerrymandering, because Pennsylvania is a particularly egregious example of the GOP Red Map initiative. So the Red Map initiative was launched after the 2010 census, and they basically dumped a whole bunch of money into state legislator races and then gained control of 25 state legislatures. They then used their majority to redraw districting lines.
You know, that's so crazy because, like, that sounds like a book.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds like a really good Grisham book.
A really good Grisham.
Like, that house, I will say, to the Republicans'
man, they
credit,
got that shit together.
That was pretty, that's interesting, genius scheme.
It's genius.
Yeah.
They were like, we're going to put $30 million into this.
And we're going to do it over time where nobody will pay attention. We'll know what's happening.
Yeah, nobody cares about state legislature races.
Right.
Fuck it.
Right. Now we do.
Right. And there was even a memo that admitted that this was the strategy for the GOP. They had pumped this dark money into these campaigns so that they could redraw these district lines. So the Pennsylvania Supreme Court basically ruled that this was unconstitutional because the Pennsylvania districts are literally, at one point, it's like a parking lot that connects one part of the district to another. Your neighbor might be in a different district from you. And it's frustrating because you never know. You know, if you're a candidate that wants to get on the ballot, you have to go to your district, but you don't know, one person might be in your district, the person right next to them might not be. And they obviously had created these districts so that it would be almost impossible for Democrats to win seats and to win a majority of the electoral vote, and thus sending only Republicans to Congress. It's ingenious.
I mean, it...
Red Map is one of the most elegant pieces of evil genius I've ever encountered in politics.
Evil genius. That's funny. It's I just imagine what's his name from Austin Powers, Dr. Evil, sitting up there, Red Map Initiative.
That's basically what it was.
Right. And so it's almost like the Eric Holder's new initiative, the gerrymander initiative.
Right.
They're going to have to figure out
infiltrate that, because so the Pennsylvania congressional districts were drawn using software that analyzes voting patterns by block and then grouping blocks together. And
isn't technology so crazy?
So they were literally crafting Republican districts. And so the Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruled that that is unconstitutional.
You think?
And they have to redraw the district lines. And quickly, they have to do it ahead of the May primaries.
Okay, Devin, it's my favorite block of the week.
Oh, yes.
Dickwad of the week. I think I just like saying dick.
Yeah. Dick.
Dickwad of the week.
So this week's Dickwad has a special place in my heart, and you will see why. His name is Cortland Sykes, and that is his real name. I didn't even make that up to make fun of him.
Doesn't he sound cute, though?
Like Cortland Sykes?
Like Cortland. Cortland.
If I were like 19 and in college, I'd want to bang that.
Right.
Yeah.
Just the name.
Right. So this asshole is a Missouri Republican, and he is running for U.S. Senate against Claire McCaskill. And he wants everyone to know that he expects dinner on the table every night at 6 p.m. and that his hypothetical future daughters, he's just engaged right now. He doesn't have any kids.
He might not be engaged anymore.
That's what I said. he said, quote, "I don't want them," his hypothetical daughters, "to grow up into career obsessed banshees who forego home life and children and the happiness of family to become," and here it is, "nail biting, manophobic, hell bent feminist she devils."
Wow. He must listen to this podcast.
I was going to say, he basically is parodying himself. I don't even need to make fun of him. Like, that's such a self-own.
I did not know. because Courtland Sykes, obviously, I believe he's just maybe within a few years older than us.
Yeah, can't be that much older.
I did not know that people still thought like that.
I didn't. This honestly, I laughed out loud
because I thought it was fake for a second.
Me too.
until I read the
this is like something the Onion would put out,
right?
You know, and it's just. I mean, me to Sykes' fiance, run, don't walk.
Right.
Like, get the fuck out.
You know what people should do?
What?
People should send food to the campaign headquarters, addressed to his fiance, and then be like, run, leave him.
Run, go.
No, go. Here's all the food that he needs. Go, get out as fast as you can.
Yeah. I feel like I need a gif of someone like just staring directly into the camera, like on a loop. Like, I feel like that's my only reaction to this. Just like
very Office.
Just very Office. Like,
yeah. Like, what is this guy's fucking problem?
Exactly. I'm sorry. I'm going to read it again. I don't want them to grow up into career obsessed banshees who forgo home life and children and the happiness of family to become nail biting, manophobic, hell bent, feminist she devils. Someone put that on my tombstone.
I think that you should take that quote,
yeah,
and make it the banner.
Oh yeah,
of the Twitter feed or the Facebook.
Yes,
group, and like red hell bent in that.
No, right. Oh, I'm making some merch with that shit.
Yes,
because that is too
and then
good.
Send him a shirt
and then be like, look, I know how much you love us, so.
But can you not use?
Could you not?
Could you not? We copyrighted that. We trademarked.
We want this one.
You can't use it in your stupid memo.
And then he also compared Claire McCaskill to the character Ursula from The Little Mermaid.
Well, she's definitely listening to this podcast then, because we know that she's not Ursula.
Right, because Mitch McConnell
is Ursula.
I know, you
he
can't.
He got that right. He got that wrong.
He got that wrong. You can't just move the moniker around like that.
No.
I know.
Let her be another villain. Hey, Devin, we're at the end. At the end. Thanks for listening, guys. What are some action items?
Okay, so the first one relates directly to our dickwad of the week. And this is, go volunteer for the campaign of a woman who's running for office. And bonus points if they're up against an opponent who has said anything half as good as nail-biting, manophobic, hell-bent she-devil.
We should send a shirt to Claire McCaskill.
Yes.
And she could... Could you imagine? Wouldn't that be great?
That would with be that, so good.
Because you could say, I'm a nail-biting, manophobic, hell-bent, feminist she-devil. We're doing it.
We're doing it.
Sending it to Claire McCaskill.
Absolutely.
And maybe Kamala Harris.
Maybe Kamala Harris.
Yeah, yeah. The other thing you guys can do is find out the state of your district and whether or not it's been gerrymandered to hell. And then call your state representatives about it. You know, we live in California where we don't have to worry about that so much.
Right.
But if you're in a red state, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, some of these states that they've really taken the pen to Texas, I know is going through it, has gone through it before.
Yeah.
Several times. And Republicans will, you know, like I said a couple of weeks ago, Republicans will not stop to stop the bleeding from these losses that they have had over these past few months. So that is definitely something. So what we thought, the tactics we thought we should be using, we need to amplify them.
Yes.
And that is a lot of, you know, I think you guys are, the listeners doing it right now, listening to podcasts like these, taking in information and
grassroots organizing,
getting out there and using that information to kind of just help people out and just remind people that better times are on the way.
Yes, absolutely. So that was a long packed show.
That was a lot.
Thank you Hellions for listening. You can follow Drexel at Drexel Herd.
That's right.
And you can watch his show The Political Beat on YouTube.
Yes.
And you can follow me on Twitter at Devin Handy. And I will see you back here on Thursday with another very special guest. Thank you.